This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. What a day. Tons of trades, tons to talk about. So I'm so glad we're able to hook up with EJ Raddick from the NHL Network. You can see his show NHL Now from 4 to 6 Eastern, and he's been all over the place with this trade deadline stuff, tweeting a lot of great stuff about Meyer to the Devils and the situation with the Rangers. And how are you, buddy?
I'm good. Yeah, yesterday was a very heavy phone day yesterday. Lots going on. I think the biggest service that I was able to provide for Devils fans was just letting them know that as they were waiting to see what the deal was going to be, I was able to cipher that Jonathan Mercer was not in the deal, and Devils fans were very concerned about that, as they should have been, because he's a really good player. But that was a deal breaker going back to the start of those negotiations. So once I was pretty clear and pretty certain of that, I was able to tweet that out, and Devils fans at least had a sigh of relief if they believed what I was saying. So what I was getting, maybe they didn't. Who knows? But in the end, he wasn't part of it. And I guess for Sharks fans, they were disappointed because they would have loved to have gotten Dawson Mercer, who, as I say, is a good player.
Yeah, because I'll be honest with you, looking at it, it'd be a nice addition. It's completely different keeping Mercer. Because, yeah, you're getting better, but Mercer's got 18 goals. He's played well. I mean, to be able to hold on to Mercer, to me, was a game changer.
Yeah, I don't think they were, like I said, I don't think Tommy Fitzgerald was ever going to include Mercer in that deal. I mean, these deals, when you look at them, Don, over the years, and we've been talking about hockey and hockey trades for a long time now, it's usually when a seller is in, you know, they're in a distressed situation. I mean, yeah, I guess they could keep Timo Meier in San Jose, but, you know, they need to kind of change the mix there. They have some contracts they really can't move. Use one if they can. They would have to QO him at $10 million for next year. They would have to commit to him for a longer-term contract to keep him. They already have some tricky contracts there, so they're trying to kind of reshuffle and rebuild. So when teams see that, you know, they're not going to offer your best prospect to you. I mean, it's just simple as that. I mean, what you end up with is a package of things. I think in this case, if Sharks fans really look at it, I think they ended up doing okay. They get Fabian Zetterlund, who's a player that can play for them. They get Michael McGoolin, who, and I don't have no idea if I'm saying his name correctly, but he was a first-round draft pick.
Right.
He's a guy that's on the move that doesn't really have a place with the Devils moving forward, at least right now, because they've got Luke Hughes, the left-shot defenseman, coming, who's kind of ahead of him, right? So it's an asset the Devils can afford to move. They got a couple other pieces in there, guys who could come in and be players for them, and they got draft picks. So, you know, for San Jose, they got a lot of things. They obviously gave up the best asset in the deal in Timo Meier, who's a really good player, and has got a really good fit for the Devils, and will, I think, at some point sign a longer-term deal to stay in New Jersey. So I think in the end it'll work out for both teams. The Devils are a team that's coming on now, and Meier fits in their window. And for San Jose, I mean, that was probably the best offer they received for, you know, in terms of quantity of assets in return, and probably quality, too, for Meier. So, you know, Sharks fans will be disappointed they wanted a bigger name in there, but just not the way it worked in most cases. I think they did as good as they were going to do.
And do you have any kind of indication if the Devils would be in the running to re-sign him?
I think they would be. I mean, Claude Lemieux is his agent, former Devil, former NHL player, right? So fans are very familiar with Claude Lemieux. And he's been in the agent game. And I think you know how Claude Lemieux was as a player. I think he's probably similar in the competitive nature as an agent. He worked hard for his clients. Last year around this time, he is the agent of Hampus Lindholm. Last year around this time, the Boston Bruins acquired Hampus Lindholm in a similar type deal. He went on only a few days later to sign a long-term contract extension with Boston Bruins. So might be a little bit more complicated here. Meyer's contract would be a little more significant. But I think at the end of the day, I think there's a really good chance that Timo Meier really wants to be a New Jersey Devil. And so I think in the end, both Tommy Fitzgerald and Claude Lemieux, the agent, will make it work, and he will sign long-term. Whether that happens tomorrow or whether it happens 2 months from now or a year from now, I'm not 100% certain, but I do think that the plan is for Keenan Meyer to stay a Devil for a long time.
All right, and now we shift a little bit lower in the Metropolitan Division, and that's the saga with the Rangers. Very interesting couple of days, to say the least. They got to play 11-7, and then I don't remember ever seeing in my life, and obviously this would be post-salary cap, EJ, players dressing beyond the bench and not playing. I've seen players pulled, plenty of players pulled and not play because they might get dealt. Yeah. But have you ever remembered players actually suiting up on the bench and not playing?
I know it has happened on a couple of occasions. I don't recall the circumstances. But it's all part of the salary cap gymnastics that the Rangers are going through to acquire Patrick Kane, which will happen later in the week. Just a matter of when the cap dollars all make sense, and they were able to be compliant. So there's a lot of different scenarios. Seen them play out with paper transactions now. Schneider, and I think it was Carpenter. That said,
yes, down, Ryan Carpenter.
Play down there. And, you know, part of the problem or part of this thing, and I'm not 100% clear on this, but I think maybe you'll be able to correct me because you were watching things unfold yesterday. The problem for the Rangers is that those players, if they were to get hurt, they couldn't be sent down.
Right.
So that's why they didn't want to play them in the game. And so, again, it's all tied to the cap gymnastics and the cap, you know, game that has gone on here in the last several days. And it's, if Art Levine works for Puckpedia, he's the creator of Puckpedia, one of the sites that tracks contracts and salary cap status. He does a great job. He's come on our show and, you know, he said last week when he was on our show, if the Rangers wave with Vision, he goes, that's a sign that the wheels are... And then if they decide to do something with Kravtsov, it's the same thing. And those things happen. And once those things went into place, then you make phone calls to find out. I mean, it's pretty... 99.9% certain that Patrick Kane is going to be a Ranger. Until it's done, it's never done. So I never want to say 100%, but, I mean, it would be going through a lot of hoops for nothing. Doesn't happen. And getting a third team involved to pick up, half of a half, so to speak, or what would be 25% of what's remaining on Kane's deal, will not be that difficult to do because Kane's contract is such that there are not as many real dollars left on his contract. So there will be someone that will come along and be happy to make that, will be part of the deal and probably get like a fourth round pick in return for doing so. And like I said, Patrick Kane will be a New York Ranger almost certainly by, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, somewhere in there.
Yeah, people were asking on social media, you're not circumventing the cap by having them be on the bench. They're on the bench. So there was no, like, taking the cap hit away. It's just that, like you said, Braden Schneider takes a puck to the face, gets a concussion, can't be sent down to Hartford. That's the thing that they were really concerned about. And the thing that's interesting, EJ, they were really up against it because then Keandre Miller spits towards Drew Doughty, takes a game misconduct. They're playing with four defensemen for over two periods. If somebody else had gotten hurt, Gallant said he really did not want to have to play him. Carpenter ended up playing 13 seconds after coming out of the box, serving the major for Miller. But it would have been interesting if another defenseman had gone down or had been thrown out of the game. He might have had no choice but to play Schneider at that point.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's been a fascinating week to watch all this unfold because it is it's not something we're used to seeing. And some will say, is this really good for the game? I mean, listen, the rules are the rules, and everybody tries to work within them, and they make them, it's a salary cap league. These are difficult sometimes. I think it's kind of fascinating, and I think it has been kind of fun to watch and see it play out. Doesn't necessarily rub me the wrong way.
No.
That's just my opinion. It's just the rules, and it's like I said, it's been given us a lot to kind of digest. And to understand, and reminds those 10-year-old, 12-year-old hockey fans sitting in their math class today, study, do your, listen, pay attention, because this math, you wonder when you're a little kid, what is this going to do for me in life?
Right.
It could do a lot.
It could do a lot.
I would be much better off today the math that goes into these things. But at any rate, it is fascinating. And that was a crazy game. And you're right. The thing that happened with Miller was obviously completely unexpected. The Zibanejad got hit with that shot. You didn't know what was going to happen with him. He could have been lost for the game. I mean, it was kind of a very strange, even the start time, right, at 5 o'clock on a Sunday. It's not something that happens all the time. So the whole thing was really kind of crazy. And, you know, we'll have to wait now to see what happens with Miller. I would suspect he's going to get suspended because although my opinion watching it was I think he had a brain cramp.
Yes.
I don't think there was intent there. That's my opinion. Because everyone sees a different lens, and everybody will have a different opinion, I'm sure. If you're a Kings fan, if you're a Ranger fan, you have a different opinion. My opinion is, it looked to me that he just had a brain cramp, and, you know, guys just sometimes they just spit during games.
No, they do. And
And I think that he just had a brain cramp, and that happened. And but at the end of the day, you can't do it. So I expect he's going to get suspended and maybe for 3 games because that seemed to be what we've seen in the past. Time will tell, but that's
well,
my take on it.
You could see by his reaction how devastated he was by it. Probably a combination of embarrassment and also how shorthanded the Rangers were going to be the rest of the way. Now, he tweeted out today, actually just moments ago, we're doing this right now at 12:16 Eastern. This was tweeted at 12:09. I wanted to take a moment to address what occurred in last night's game. I have all the respect in the world for Drew Doughty, and what happened was completely accidental. I would never intend to do something like that on purpose. It goes against everything I am as a person and player. I felt awful about it, and I am thankful Drew gave me the opportunity to apologize and explain myself in person after the game. Now, whether that's enough to absolve him of any further discipline, but that kind of jives with what we both felt, that it was an accident, just something that was not intentional at all, but still, I guess you still have to pay the piper at the end of the day.
Yeah, I get the sense that you do. I mean, because it is something, whether it's intentional or not, that happened, and it's a line you can't cross. And so, even if it is accidental, so I will see what the league decides to do. I suspect he will be suspended, but you know, I believe Keandre Miller, and you know, I'm glad Drew Doughty's. You know, Keandre mentioning Drew Doughty was willing, you know, to hear him out because you know, listen, something like that happens, you may not want to hear anything from the other person. And to be honest with you, I mean, Drew Doughty, I thought he had tremendous restraint in the game.
Yeah.
Because that is not something that usually people take too kindly to in any walk of life. So, in the end. We'll see how it plays out, but I do suspect he'll be suspended, but we'll see.
All right, so it looks like Kane's going to come here. Now, where do you think they put Kane? Because you can make the case you put him on the top line, because I don't think Jimmy Vesey really fits with Kreider and Zibanejad. Or are you tempted to have him play with Mott and Gaudreau and round out 4 really solid lines to attack in the postseason?
Listen, once this happens, they're going to be able to juggle and see what works. For me, I'm putting with Panarin on the other side. I'd probably move Tarasenko around. I'm moving Jimmy Vesey to the fourth line, and that's the way I'm starting it. And then just let time take its course and see how things go and see how people fit. But that's what I would do if I was, you know, if I was working. I mean, we've already seen that. I mean, lines change, John. You do the games.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you see how it goes. I mean, you start out with a line for 2 shifts, and all of a sudden now it shifts to something else. So these guys are pretty pliable that way. But if I'm starting and I'm getting Kane with Panarin and moving from there.
And I know Tarasenko, he had that first goal against Seattle. He's only had a couple of goals, but I think people need to give him a bit of a break. He had spent his entire career in St. Louis. It's going to be an adjustment for him. And if you go back to when Martin St. Louis was acquired back in 2014, I think he had like, 8-9 points in like 17-18 games to close out the regular season, and he ended up being a beast in the postseason. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about Tarasenko, would you?
Yeah, it takes time. I mean, there's the adrenaline of the first night and those first couple of games, but that's worn off a little bit now, and now the focus is on, you know, the day-to-day, and, you know, it's a veteran player who, you know, he can score goals. He's got a great shot. I mean, there's going to be times he's going to get opportunities in important games, and he's going to finish. And that's what you're hoping for if you're a Ranger fan. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's the only negative. I mean, there's always negatives in everything, right? I mean, some of the negatives here to me are, like, there's not a lot of time for these guys all to come together, right, and get that, you know, become, you know, mesh as a team with the guys that are currently there. Because these are big-time players. They're big personalities. They command ice time, right? So that will be the challenge too for Gerard Gallant to kind of make sure that the, you know, the guys get their time and see what situations he puts people in. I mean, it's a good problem to have. But in all sports, Donnie, we've seen this many, many times, right, where you make big acquisitions at a deadline and, you know, more often than not, it doesn't work out. But there's only one team wins a championship, right?
Yeah.
So more often than not, it doesn't. But I think it doesn't mean you don't do it because you're always trying to get your team better. I mean, this is exciting for the New York Rangers. They have a hell of a roster. To add another piece like Patrick Kane, it slides, as you mentioned, Jimmy V's team to a spot that I think, really, when you think about a championship roster, that's where Jimmy VC would be. And Jimmy VC's been really good this year, and he's a really smart player. And I think he understands the pecking order, and I think he'll be a good player in that role. So, see how things play out. I mean, it'll be fascinating to watch. It'll be exciting to watch. As a hockey, you know, someone who covers the game, and as a hockey fan, these kind of things are always exciting to see how they play out. And Patrick Kane is just he's a world-class talent. We've seen in the last couple of weeks, and I think he got a little tick personally that, you know, people were doubting his abilities, and he put on a show over the last couple of games that he played in Chicago. So he'll eventually be here a couple more days, and then they'll have about, 6 weeks, 20 games or so to get him kind of, find his way with this new group. But I'm excited to watch just as a hockey fan. So the Eastern Conference, boy, it's an arms race right now. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I you look at all these teams, you know, with 66, 64 points, although I guess Washington's tapping out, right, with the deals that they've made. I think they realize
they are, right, in terms of, like, they've traded some really important assets. But, listen, they beat the Rangers on Saturday.
They did.
They got tied up in a score-a-thon with Buffalo the other day and lost. But, I mean, I'm not ruling anybody out who's, you know, points-wise they're still in. The Capitals still have some really competitive guys. They got a couple of good goalies. I mean, they're challenged on defense. But who's to say they don't go out and use some of their assets and bring in Jake Chychrun? And all of a sudden, and maybe they're a little bit more competitive defensively down the stretch, because that's the hole for them right now. So we'll see how it plays out. But, I think that, you know, until you're out, you're in this race. And,
true.
You know, between the Islanders and the Penguins and the, you know, the Sabres and the Red Wings and the Panthers. And, I mean, it's going to be a heck of a race down the stretch here.
I guess you never know, right? I mean, you're a Yankee fan. You remember they sold out of all their assets in 2016. Next thing you know, they're back in the race again. I mean, it's not a crazy thought, but, you know, I was talking to a lot of the people in Washington. John Walton, one of them, the radio play-by-play voice, and condolences go out to him. He lost his brother in a plane crash over the weekend. I think the day of the game Saturday, and might have been during the game because he had not said anything to me before the game, but condolences go out to him. He's a tremendous guy and a tremendous talent. But he was saying that they only had 12 guys under contract going into the season, and there's a lot of really interesting assets still left on this team. Jensen is somebody I'm sure teams would love to be able to pick up. He's a top-tier defenseman for the Capitals, and, you know, a lot of other players too. So I personally think it would be a mistake to not do that because I don't think this is going to go anywhere. But at the same time, if they get a feel for something and what's a wide-open Eastern Conference outside of Boston – I guess you can't fault them for trying. We'll see.
Yeah, you know what I would just say this, Donnie, is anything that Brian McClellan does, he's not going into a total rebuild there, right? He's got Ovechkin, he's got Backstrom, he's got Wilson, he's got Kuznetsov, he's got a number of good players. Like, and while Ovechkin's there, they're going to try to be a very competitive team. I think he's looked at it. He's been a lot of injuries this year. There's been some underperformance. There have been guys who, like, Backstrom missed the whole half a year. He's still rounding his way back into things. I think, like, in a place like a guy like Jacob Chychrun, you know, he could come in for a team like Washington or Pittsburgh, where their window is short. He's on a really good contract, he can be a real helpful player for them in the prime of his career for the next couple of years on a, you know, like I said, on a good deal. So that's what's appealing about doing something like that. But to your point, I think, you know, yeah, like if there's a good offer for Lars Eller, they'll probably take it. You know, if there's a really good offer for Jensen, maybe they take it. Trevor Van Riemsdyk has had a really good year for them on defense as a right shot D. So, you know, he may want to keep some of those guys, but I think if there's good offers, he'll move them. Just like I say, if he can find a younger player that's on a good deal, that's on term, like a Chychrun, might go in for that too.
Yeah, Eller's really struggled. I think he's only got 1 point in the calendar year of 2023. He hasn't scored a goal since, I think it was December 27th against the Rangers. But yeah, he wins faceoffs. He's kind of like that perfect postseason player that you can use on a fourth line. So it'll be interesting. What's not really interesting is really anybody outside of the teams that are already in the West. I mean, Nashville already sent Janot to Tampa, so it looks like they're selling off pieces. And how about a little change at the general manager position for the first time in franchise history? Boyle's going to step down and retire at the end of the year, and it looks like Barry Trotz is jumping in. I guess this was the plan on, you know, exiting the Islanders after all, or did this kind of develop over the last year or so?
Well, I mean, unless they want to tell us, I mean, it's hard to know when it started, right? I mean, but I'm gonna say this is something that developed over time. I don't think it was a grand plan. I just think it's, you know, like, you know, Barry had a lot of personal things that went on with him over the last, you know, 12 months with his parents. I believe both of his parents passed away, at least one of them, and. You know, he ended up moving out of coaching, and he wasn't sure. He talked about maybe coming back into coaching, but he definitely voiced his thoughts about maybe being in a management role. And he lives down there. He's been a part of that. He was a part of that franchise right from the start. He's a beloved guy down there, and he's a smart hockey guy. So that makes some sense for sure. The timing of the announcement by David Poyle is a little weird, though. I mean, like the week of the trade deadline.
Right.
I mean, the GM's meetings are coming up in 2 weeks. That could have been a time to make that announcement. But nonetheless, it is what it is, and he's having a press conference, I think, as we speak. And, you know, Barry, you know, David has had an unbelievable career and a long career as a general manager in this league. And so we congratulate him on that. And I assume he's going to still kind of be around that organization, maybe in some kind of advisory role. And for Barry, it's a wonderful opportunity, and he's a great human being, and you wish him nothing but the best. They got some challenges there, although they did get quite a haul of draft picks for Tanner Janot. I mean, you would not expect that kind of return for a draft pick compensation for a player like that. But Tampa Bay Lightning, they're trying to win now. Their window is still open. The goalie is 28. You know, Vasilevsky seems like he's been around forever. He's just 28. You know, Kucherov is 29. Point is 26. Hedman looks like he could play till he's 40. He's only in his mid-30s at best.
Right.
So Stamkos in a similar situation. So, you know, they're trying to win as long as they can. And Tanner Janot brings the heaviness to their group. They probably look at, you know, playing Toronto and playing Boston, obviously.
Yeah.
They do, and if they're on a path again to another final, and they wanted to add that heaviness. And, you know, when the time comes for Tampa Bay to pay the piper down the road when things start to go the other way, they'll be able to move some of their assets to recoup some of those draft picks. So, you know, people look at it and they shake their head because it was an awful lot to give up. But I'm willing to bet on Julien Brisebois and those guys as guys who really understand what it takes to win. And like I said, when the time comes, if they have to down the road, they'll trade some of those assets and get those. They'll try to restock the cupboard at that time.
All right, buddy, I know you got to run. Thanks for a couple of minutes, and I guess if we get a chance to talk to you next Monday, the deadline will be over, and we'll know who's where, and just can get stick our head and get ready for the playoffs.
Yes, I think I can only work today on my show for 90 minutes because of cap considerations.
So okay, no, I understand that. That makes sense.
Probably won't work, but you know, I'll see what I can come up with.
I plan on dressing on the Michael Kay show, but I'm not going to say anything.
Always good to dress.
Yeah, that, everybody knows that's virtually impossible. EJ, thanks, man. Enjoy your week.
Yeah.
All right, that's the great EJ Raddick, and he's going to be busy. Friday is the deadline, although a lot of pieces being moved before then. Rumors Carlson may not go anywhere in San Jose. Still some pieces that still have to be moved and still can be significant. We were talking about the Western Conference. Calgary still mathematically alive, 4 points back of Seattle for the final wild card. And also, they sit right now 6 points back of Edmonton for third place in the Pacific Division, just not playing well, just 3 wins in their last 10. Nashville, of course, on the outside looking in as well, selling off pieces. So it looks like we have our 8 teams in the Western Conference. However, the separation between the best team in the Western Conference, Vegas, with 76 points, and the 8th seed, the second wild card in Seattle, with 70 points, is only 6 points. So any of the teams in the playoffs could either win their division or end up as the last wild card. So even though we may not have much as far as jockeying for making the playoffs in the West, all 8 of those teams could be shuffled quite a bit. But then the outside, Buffalo, Detroit, Florida, Washington, Ottawa is 7 points out of a playoff spot, so still technically still alive. So there's a lot of teams that still are fancying themselves as playoff teams. I still like the position Buffalo's in. They sit 1 point back of Pittsburgh for that final playoff spot with a game in hand. Buffalo's won 3 in a row. Detroit cooled off a bit with their loss over the weekend, but they're 3 points back, also with a game in hand on Pittsburgh. Florida sits 3 points back, although they've played 61 games, so they've got a lot of work. Islanders, give them credit, played a little bit better recently, had a big shutout win over Winnipeg yesterday, 4-0. Varlamov made 23 saves. Horvat scored shorthanded, so the Islanders with 69 points. They've played 63 games, though, so they'll be sitting around watching some teams catch up with them, but they've grown their plus goal differential to 9, so they're looking pretty good there. So I think the Islanders are going to find a way to be able to get in the playoffs. Pittsburgh making a huge statement with their 7-3 win over the Lightning yesterday. Seattle slowing down just a bit as the Maple Leafs clobber them 5-1. How about Kaprizov? Natural hat trick and a 3-2 win in overtime over the Blue Jackets. Kaprizov becomes just the 5th player in history of the NHL to have a natural hat trick in which the hat trick goal came in overtime to win the game. So pretty good stuff there. Taking a look at the games we have tonight, there are 5 of them, but all, you know, pretty significant. The Red Wings in Ottawa to take on the Senators so they can climb back into the playoff race. The Boston Bruins just continue to march forward. 6 straight wins. Things are going so well for Boston. Their goaltender scored a goal over the weekend. Allmark into the empty net. But Edmonton has been red hot, and boy, Connor McDavid has just been special. 48 goals to lead the league, 113 points to lead the league. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Possibly a Stanley Cup preview. Vancouver's at Dallas. Dallas wants to fend off the tide there in the Central Division. The Golden Knights and Avalanche. That should be a fun game at 9 o'clock. And then the Blackhawks and the Ducks. Ducks have actually played pretty well as of late, but those are just a couple of also-rans and what pieces will be sent off before it is all said and done. So looks like it's just a matter of time. Keep your eye on your phone when the Patrick Kane deal can come down. Rangers catch a bit of a break. They don't play until Wednesday in Philadelphia for a 7:30 faceoff. I'll have the call with Dave Maloney on that one. So it could happen today, could happen tomorrow. Kane, at last check, was in Chicago. He was in San Jose over the weekend, flew home in anticipation of a deal being made. There's really nothing else that can happen here. It's just a matter of, as EJ said, working out that third team that can take some of the salary away to make it fit, and they're going to try to take all the time they need. You hope it's going to be sooner than later so that we can get a chance to see them. Rangers play Thursday at home against Ottawa, and then they play Saturday in Boston against the Bruins. Those are their 3 games this week, but they do have 2 more games before the deadline. So they've got 22 games left. So if they waited until Friday to make the deal, then you're down to just 20 games. And not really much the Rangers can do at this point. As we've talked about on the show before, we're kind of landlocked with the Devils and the Rangers playing in the first round. Devils with 83 points, 59 games played. The Rangers have 77 with 60 games played. So the Rangers are 6 points back of the Devils, and the Devils have a game in hand. The Devils have to go out west. They've got Colorado coming up, and I just gave you the Rangers schedule this week. So still a possibility to catch the Devils and get home ice advantage, but they're not, I don't think, going to get caught by the Islanders, who have 69 points. They got an 8-point lead there with 3 games in hand. So the Rangers are not in any kind of desperate sorts as far as the standings are concerned, other than wanting to get home ice in the first round of the playoffs. But I don't think they'll just wait it out. They've got until Friday, and I guess it's possible this could take until Friday, although you hope, just selfishly, as somebody who covers the Rangers, to be able to get Kane in that game against Philadelphia on Wednesday. And that game's on TNT, too, so I'm sure they'd be pretty excited to be able to have Patrick Kane make his debut in Philadelphia. And it may be Patrick Kane's greatest moment as a professional came in Philadelphia with that big overtime goal in Game 6 against the Philadelphia Flyers in the 2010 Stanley Cup Final. So there'll be some irony there as well, as it looks like Patrick Kane era in Chicago is coming to an end. And kind of sad, though, too. You know, when you look at Keith is gone, Seabrook is gone, and now Kane's going to be a Ranger, and it looks like Jonathan Toews playing in his final year with Chicago, an end of an era for sure, but it was a nice run. Guess you can't be too upset. Got three Stanley Cups with that group, and looks like it's going to be officially coming to an end by the end of this year. So we'll be back on Wednesday. I'll do the game misconduct from Philadelphia, or maybe I'll do it before I leave. Either way, we'll work it out, and we'll have hopefully a little bit of resolution on Kane's situation, any more trades to come down, and we'll also spend some time with you on Wednesday with the social media on Twitter and at Don LaGreca, hashtag game misconduct. So we will speak again on Wednesday. Thanks to EJ Raddick. Thanks to Anthony Pusick. We'll talk to you again on Wednesday. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.